Yes, those of you who've been listening to the radio for more than 50 years, I know there are some of you out there. You will know this. It's the theme to Blue Hills, the radio serial that ran on ABC Radio between February 1949 and September 1976. So its final episode was on just 50 years ago. While Blue Hills is best, perhaps the best remembered of Australia's radio dramas, there was a golden age. It went from the 30s through to the late 50s. It produced scores of these radio serials and dramas. Tonight we're going to remember some of them. I hope you will give me a call and share some of your favourites with me. Is there a memorable episode of Blue Hills you remember? Does remembering it bring back a certain time and place in your life? What other serials or dramas do you remember listening to? Perhaps it was something that your mum or dad used to listen to. Now, my guest tonight is Steve Ahern. Steve's actually an old boss of mine here at the ABC. He's a radio broadcast training consultant. He's written books about making radio. He's the founder of the radio news website, radioinfo.com.au. He's dying to take you back to the days of the radio serial here on Nightlife. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Suzanne. Nice to be back near a microphone here at Nightlife.
Right on top of it. Now, hop on the phones, Nightlife. It's 1-300-800-222 or SMS 046-7922-702. Steve, what's your own experience with radio serials and radio dramas?
Well, my mum and dad listened to the radio all the time and they refused to get one of those newfangled television sets for a very long time. So I remember listening to Kindergarten of the Air on our little blue radio, literally on the mantelpiece when I was a kid before school, and then going to primary school, listening to a lot of schools and kids' shows on the radio. And then we got television and, you know, eyes went to television. But probably until about third class, we didn't have a television. Not because we couldn't, but just because they didn't think they needed one.
Oh, nor did they, Steve, as we know. Now, when we say radio drama, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, let's go big. And, you know, you could think about radio drama as just radio plays. But really, they began with plays on the radio, but then became serials and short pieces, dramettes, and all that sort of thing. So tonight we're going to talk about all of those and have a listen to various types. But, you know, the first radio drama was a drama. It was a play, and it was on a station in Melbourne that later became an ABC station called 3LO. I managed that station years ago. But in the 1920s, when The Barbarous Barber was the first play broadcast on 3LO, it was not part of the ABC because it was a commercial radio station.
Right. So tell us about The Barbarous Barber. I mean, it sounds barbaric.
It was barbaric. It was a horror play. And it was a kind of Sweeney Todd kind of thing written in Australia. There were some firsts in America. The first radio drama was what they call a log cabin drama, you know, something set in the woods of outback America. It was called The Wolf in 1922. In Britain, the first radio drama was Twelfth Night. Of course, they would do Shakespeare, 1923. And here in Australia in 1925, J.H. Booth wrote the horror story, The Barbarous Barber, and it was performed live in the evening on 3LO at that time in 1925. And this barber slit people's throats and did awful things. And people were horrified by this drama, but titillated as well.
So they literally live, they would act it out every night.
Absolutely. There's, as we know now, you know, we're in an amazing digital studio where everything can be recorded in so many ways. But until about the 1930s, recording of things that went on the radio was just not really possible. Mm. Yes, there were wax cylinders and wire recorders, but not in any kind of industrial sense. So most things were recorded live, and those dramas and serials, especially in the evening from about 6 o'clock, when you would sit down and listen to the radio, they would come from a head of network station, usually Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, a lot of creatives in Adelaide at that time. And then those radio stations would connect and through telecom lines, and you would hear the play being performed live across Australia. In the 1930s, they invented what's called transcription discs, just big records. But if our listeners remember records, some people don't, young people, but I'm sure our listeners do, you'll remember there's 33 and a third and 45, and you put the needle on the outside edge and it went inside. But actually, the professional transcription discs were twice as big as a 33 LP, and you put the needle on the inside and it played outwards. And that was when those live recordings were able to be captured and then syndicated across Australia to be played at different times.
But until then, all live. So if they made if they forgot their lines.
I know.
Live to air.
Yes. But like live theatre, that was the magic of it until those times.
So the Barbarous Barber, are there any recordings of it?
There's nothing left. And sadly, we can't bring it to the listeners tonight. By the way, there's some great collections of audio. And as we talk through tonight, listeners would be able to find some of the audio at the National Film and Sound Archive. And recently, I mean, we're now 103 years of radio in Australia. So for the 100th anniversary, they collected a lot of this stuff and it's available. And also some of the commercial recordings are from the great production house that started by Grace Gibson, and they're also available online at gracegibsonradio.com.
You're on Nightlife. Suzanne Hill with you. I've got Steve Ahern, who is a radio guru, here with me tonight. We're talking radio series, radio dramas. If you've got some memories of listening to some of these, I'd love you to call 1-300-800-222. Steve, why did it become so important during the Depression years?
Well, and actually, this is something really interesting about these radio plays. And as we talk about them and play a few of them, it reflects society. So before the 20s, radio was invented at the end of the 1800s and began to be propagated around the world in the 1900s and 1910s. And the first operators were what we call ham radio operators now. And in Australia, with such a big coastline, we started to get listening stations, monitoring stations around the coast, you know, coast watchers. People would be radio stations back to the military to watch boat arrivals. Funny, not much has changed, has it? And then in the 1920s, radio sets became readily available, and stations went on air really to sell radios. That was the business model, sell these radios and get a license, pay the government a license. And, you know, it was a medium in its infancy in the roaring 20s, but then the Depression came all over the world and people were stuck at home. They didn't have money to go to the theatre, to go to restaurants, to do all the things that they did. Many people became unemployed. People were sad and depressed. And what could uplift them for a very small cost but this free new medium called radio?
How expensive was it to buy a radio back in the very early days, though, Steve? Was it a really, you know, expensive investment?
In the early days, not so much, because you could buy the components. You could make a diode radio, and that's what most people did who couldn't afford it. Then if you were wealthy, then you would buy a very nice thing in a cabinet and put it in your living room and everyone would sit around it. But radios were accessible quite cheaply to people who would buy the parts. And there were lots of magazines and how to make radio information brochures so that people would easily get them.
Mm. Now, we've called from the late 30s through to the 50s a kind of a golden age of radio drama. Why was it so?
Because money flowed and audiences flowed. Mm. So it was the Depression that got people really linked to radio. And those radio sets gradually became a part of the furniture in your living room. And once there was that, well, the theatre was in your living room. Mm. So, you know, cook in the kitchen, serve dinner in the dining room, and then adjourn to the living room to listen to maybe a news bulletin, and then probably earlier than that, some children's serials. And then after that, to listen to these amazing serials that were performed for you each night.
And Steve, I mean, your own example growing up without a TV until you were in third class, I think you said. Did you remember that with your family, like gathering around listening?
That wasn't such a thing because we didn't have one of those big radio sets.
Right.
So it was different.
I suppose when it's a tiny box, it feels a bit sillier to all gather around it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I just remember it was literally on the mantelpiece and I would sit there and we would go in and listen. And then, of course, as I got older, then I was allowed to have a radio in my room while doing my homework. So, of course, I listened to Yes What?
Which we will talk about shortly. I just want to understand, Steve, the kind of the range of what was produced during this era.
Yeah. A lot of it was American. And when transcription discs came in, then we in Australia heard American actors doing American scripts sent in these big records to Australia. But then as the war broke out, there were blockades of ships and these things came on ships to Australia, and the limited amount of ships that could get through weren't allowed to bring frivolous things like radio discs. They had to bring food and weapons and whatever. So the only thing that could get through were the scripts, and that was huge, you know, from those early days of acting. Acting out radio plays, actors were facing a lot of challenges at that time, and theatre was under pressure. But actors got new jobs doing the live radio. Then they were challenged by these American voices on transcription discs, and by chance, the war put a stop to that, and all Australian actors were used. So famous people, Bud Tingwell, Leonard Teal, the great actors of the movies who went on from Australia to Hollywood usually started as radio actors.
Wow. And I think we had everything. I mean, daily serials, you know, crime drama, that's always been a hit, hasn't it? We could have Outback sagas or family stories. So it was really anything and everything.
So true.
You might find. Right, let's talk about some of them. Now, the first one I'm going to play is a bit of something called Cattleman.
Cattleman, a saga of the outback specially dramatized from the prize-winning novel of R.S. Porteous. Cattleman.
All right, tell us about Cattleman.
Yeah, Cattleman was one of the later radio series, but in that rural mould. So we have the outback tradition that stretches back before radio to Henry Lawson and, the great ballads, Banjo Paterson. And as time went by, the rural parts of Australia are a bit neglected, and Cattleman was made in the 1960s. Before that, there were some other great radio dramas of the bush, and Blue Heels was one of them. But Cattleman was a bit of a revival of the interest in the outback and a new respect for the people of the outback in the 1960s. And that's what it reflects. You know, we had sheep country, we had cattle country, and, you know, all different parts of Australia had those conflicts. Like, it's sheep country here. No, no, down south, down the snow, it's cattle country. And Cattleman in the scripts reflected that, the conflicts and, of course, the family dramas of people who owned farms. Now, all those family-owned farms are sold to big corporates, but this was another drama about family life on the farm.
I suppose it began when I left home. I was just a kid then, ragged and skinny and green as they come. I'd been brought up by my old man. Oh, maybe I should have said dragged up. Don't even remember my mother. She died soon after I was born. And from then on, the old man took it out on me. He was rotten drunk most of the time. And each night when he got home from the pub, he'd flay the skin off me for want of something better to do. Oh, when he could find me, that is. After a bit, I got to foxing him by hiding in the woodshed at the back of the house.
Now, that's so interesting, and I alluded to how these audio pieces reflect the time. And you can see, you know, some of these dramas, and there'll be a couple of the things we might play that could be quite confronting in our modern time, but they were a part of life, you know. Dad came home drunk and he beat the kid. You know, it reflected some of the trauma of the time. And a lot of these scripts tried to then turn it, you know, tried to show that difficulty, and then you'd hear maybe the mother and the auntie talking about how the father beat the child and trying to convince the father. So these things reflected life, which was really even amplified even more in the bush, because we know that times get hard in the bush.
But there was a sense then of, though, trying to teach a kind of moral?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of the time, when we look back at it now and just listen to a clip, you can form one of two opinions, that it was normalising this bad behaviour, but when you actually listen to these serials day after day, they were bringing up troubles in families, and then they were exploring ways to try and make it better.
Yeah. Interesting, Steve. I was in Africa, maybe it was 25 years ago, and radio serials were still quite a thing in Africa, radio dramas. But the way, what they would be doing would be trying to, for example, warn people about the dangers of AIDS, and the radio series would all reflect the kind of social issues that were big in those countries.
Yes, so true. In fact, interesting you mentioned Africa. South Africa was one of the last countries in the world to get television in the late 1970s. And Grace Gibson Productions, there's that name again, huge production house. She became a millionaire. And we exported our radio dramas to places, including South Africa, and they were being played until the 1970s in South Africa. Yeah. I also did some work and have done it in recent years in Africa, places like South Sudan and also Afghanistan, where we used radio drama, which is still very popular and very personal, especially these days in a place like Afghanistan where media is very limited. We used the device of a hairdresser or a taxi or a bus, where people would get on and would talk to the bus driver or the taxi driver about the day's problem. So it was a way to illustrate that, to propose a problem and then talk about solutions to it. So yes, it's that kind of using radio drama, which is anonymous and you can listen to it privately, unlike television, to use that to help people think through the issues that they might be dealing with and propose solutions is still very prevalent in some of those countries.
Steve Ahern is here. He is a radio guru. Mark has given us a call. I love this, Mark. Evening.
Hi. Hi.
Mark. Tell us how you're listening to us tonight.
Well, I'm listening to this lovely program on a 1952
AWA Radiola Valve Radio.
Wow. And now, do we sound rich and deep on those beautiful valves, Mark?
It is beautiful because then also the actual screen on the radio glows like a warm fire. You know, it is absolutely,
that's gorgeous.
And of course you get a lovely warm sound, and it's just so, and of course hearing the Blue Hills theme song and the other stuff, it just sort of really brings the joy of owning such a radio like this back.
Now, Mark, do you have to warm it up? Do you have to warm the valves up? Does it take about 20 seconds to warm up?
Yeah. When you turn the radio on, it takes about, five, 6 seconds for it to warm up. And it's just absolutely lovely.
Mark, do you have another radio, or is this your exclusive radio? Is this your kind of Saturday night radio?
Please do not get me started. I do have another valve radio from about the same period, but very recently I got pre-COVID, I bought a 1930 valve radio, very tall, like a piece of incredible timber furniture from a family that had bought it new, and it was in superb condition, but unfortunately it wasn't working, and I fortunately was able to contact a guy who very kindly got this magnificent piece working again. And it is just a pure joy to listen to this. Fortunately, we'll still pick up AM radio, but it's from 1930. And it's just, it's quite something.
You know, at that time in the 30s, Mark, this was an amazing new magical box that you've just been describing.
People had
to open the windows. They thought they had to open the window to let the radio waves come in. Oh, absolutely.
If you dig into the history of radio in Australia, particularly the 20s and 30s, it was a huge industry. And there was so much going on, and there was so much people were building their own radios, and you could buy kits, or you could buy a radio off the shelf depending upon your budget and size. And it was a huge, it was almost on the verging of sort of YouTube today. So many people were, just reading a radio test of my 1930 radio, testers were picking up stations in Melbourne, using this very early technology. And it just shows how just times were progressing so fast. By the mid-30s, this radio, this 1930 radio I have was considered ancient.
It was
progressing so fast. And of course during the war things just progressed immensely due to the American involvement here in Australia.
There's so much in our society that owes its progress, I think, in a good way, to radio. Now, you've been talking about radio in the 20s and the 30s and that beautiful valve radio, AWA. But, in a huge continent like ours, those big transmitters, the 3LO transmitter on 774 and the 2BL, or it was 2SB first, transmitter on 702 and 6WF in Perth, huge free power.
I think they 639 in South Australia, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely. They were huge transmitting stations. Yes. And I think, it wasn't long after Federation, was it? 1901 Federation and then Parliament in Canberra in the 1920s. When you think about it, radio was the way that people got to know about Federation and to hear what was going on in the Federal Parliament. It was a big element of unifying Australia.
Now, Mark, I just want to actually take you back to the radio series, because you are you listened to a lot of Blue Hills, didn't you?
Well, I was a teenager when the program finished in the 1970s. So I do recall it well, and I do recall Mum and Dad listening to it through the dare I say, through the 70s and when it finished in 1976. But I guess the reason why most Australians of a certain age grew up with that theme tune, and as much as I didn't listen to it in the 60s because I was a kid, I just find it the fact that I have this radio, which now was broadcasting that very show back in the 50s, really brings it to life.
It's been wonderful to talk to you and know that we are being heard tonight on such an amazing radio. So thank you so much for your call and for getting in touch. Steve O'Hearn is here. He is a radio guru. We are talking about the radio dramas of the golden age of radio. And I think, as we just did mention Blue Hills with Mark, Steve, it might be a good idea to jump to Blue Hills because it was such an institution. Why was it so?
Well, you know, it first began, a bit like we were talking about before, as a kind of a propaganda thing. The series was first called The Lawsons in 1943, and it was government commissioned as part of the war effort to convince farmers to grow more crops to support the war effort. And it immediately hooked people on the Lawson family. And after a while, after the war finished, it was still going, but there was a new focus. So it was recommissioned, and the Lawsons finished on a Friday, and Blue Hills started on the following Monday in 1949, and it ran for 5,795 episodes until September 1976. As Mark said, you know, he listened to it in the 70s. It was 15 minutes every day. It was an ABC drama broadcast for 27 years. And interesting little bit of trivia, Queenie Ashton was the first voice heard in the first episode playing the role of Mrs. Gordon. And also, beautifully, touchingly, Queenie Ashton, of a grand age by that time, after 27 years, uttered the last words as Granny Bishop in that series.
Wow. I actually do have the last couple of minutes that we can hear, Steve. But how much of an institution was it? Was everybody listening to it?
Absolutely. There were stores in country towns that would shut the doors, or really? People just wouldn't go. I mean, they knew that nobody would be serving at the shop for those 15 minutes. And it was part of the country hour, as we know it now. If you're listening in regional Australia, it was in that time slot, and so they knew that people working on the land came home at lunchtime, and they came home timing their lunch to hear the cattle sales prices and reports, the weather, and Blue Hills.
Bye, Granny. Look after yourself.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Jane. See as much of the world as you can. I wish I had had the opportunity of seeing more of it when I was your age.
Come on now.
That's her now. Come on, everybody, into the car.
Now, Fleur, if you get into the front seat near Topsy.
All right, Dad.
And Jackie and Anne and Jane in the back.
All right. Move over, Jane.
But I'm all mixed up with the luggage.
Yeah, there's so much of it. That's why we need a darn pantechnic and not a trailer. All right, now, all set?
Yes.
Away we go.
Away we go.
Really going.
Now, Rosa.
Now, Rose, my dear. What is there to be so sad about? Come along now.
It's saying goodbye, Granny.
Dear.
Poor little Fleur. Poor child. She'll have to build a whole new life.
Well, I have to build a whole new kitchen.
Yes, well, one thing I've always admired about you, Ed, is your sense of proportion.
Oh, well, really, Mother, you...
I always feel it so sad to have to say goodbye.
Yes, Rose, it certainly is sad this time. I wonder when we'll see them all here together again, hear their voices.
Never. We'll be under the sod by the time they all show up again.
Oh, speak for yourself. Personally, I have no intention of dying for a considerable time. I enjoy life far too much. In any case, it has always been my firm opinion that people are not really dead until nobody wishes to remember them anymore. And I flatter myself that at least a few people wish to remember me.
But they'll all be so far away.
I also maintain that distance need not matter greatly either. We don't have to see or hear people every day of the week to imagine them in our surroundings. Even to live their lives with them.
But we don't know what's happening to them, Granny.
We can use our imagination. They can still be in our minds. They can still be with us. And so, you see, it isn't really so very hard to say goodbye. To say goodbye. To say goodbye and God bless.
Ah, it's beautiful. There were many a tear shed on those last words from Queenie Ashton. You know, that was a serial for 27 years that people laughed and cried with the characters. They sent presents into the ABC when children were born. It engaged the whole of Australia.
Yeah. Someone just saying we listened to Blue Hills every lunch for years. Marion says my grandparents had a valve radio in Katoomba that I think had a sort of brass speaker or horn type thing on top. They listened to the ABC after dinner always and during the day the news, but Blue Hills always. I was born in 1950. My childhood was punctuated by Blue Hills and the ABC orchestra playing in the news, says Marion. Now, Tracy used to listen to Blue Hills, but where did you listen to it, Tracy?
I listened to it in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. And I was just a child. Like, I was born in the 60s. So at that time, I just adored it. If I had a day off school, if I was sick, I lay down, listened to the radio. That's all we had. We didn't have a TV. And yet I just dreamt about Australia.
Wow.
I'll tell you a little story, Tracy, about that. Those transcription discs we were talking about, Blue Hills was syndicated to PNG, which over the years was, you know, a protectorate of Australia or whatever, various times. So the national broadcaster there, of course, took a lot of radio from the ABC. And as I said before, Blue Hills had 5,795 episodes. There was not a complete collection of that anywhere in Australia, in any of the ABC offices or whatever. There were gaps. And eventually when somebody was collecting them all, the gaps were filled by these discs that were stored somewhere in a back room of the national broadcaster in Papua New Guinea. So they were responsible for completing the whole set in the ABC archives.
Oh, that's...
Do you know, that's extraordinary, and yet I'm not surprised. Like, they were just, it was just such an institution, you know, Radio Australia or whatever it was called then, and anything on it was so valued, and, you know, by everybody there. Yeah.
Tracy, it was so lovely to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling us tonight. Jen says, could you play the music? I can still see my mother at the kitchen sink with her apron on listening to Blue Hills.
How beautiful.
Just a snippet, Jen. We do need to move on to speak to Bill, though. Bill, you've got an interesting connection with all of this. Hello.
Hello, yes. I was a young radio announcer in the late 60s, early 70s in country New South Wales. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, yes. What station, Bill?
Yeah, with 2RG Griffith.
RG Griffith, yes.
Yeah, and we had Moving Along. And I'd known about, growing up, Blue Hills. However, when I moved to country radio as a young radio announcer, we had Grace Gibson's Dr. Paul,
When a Girl Marries,
yes. And all that. So we played them. And I was at 2RG in Griffith, played the very last Dr. Paul. But my main aim in a radio career was get back to Newcastle, which I did at the 2KO commercial station, right?
Yep.
And they were still playing for a short time When a Girl Marries Dr. Paul had finished because I played the last one. And then they came, these other ones, Chicken Man, all those sort of ones. But commercial radio, you've mainly spoken about the early years of ABC. I'm now talking about commercial radio. And Grace Gibson was the greatest of, and they would come in on a disc and we would play them.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. And actually that turns us very nicely, Bill, to some of the commercial series, and we've got a few here. Bruce Ferrier now runs Grace Gibson. It's still a company that exists, and my friend Bruce runs it. And in preparing for this tonight, we were talking about the Castlereagh line, which you probably also remember, Bill. One of those, again, those country serials recorded in the 1980s. Yep. Yeah. But Bruce Ferrier said that there are still stations playing that, and the station managers tell him that they'd be run out of town if they if took it off the air.
Pack up your bags, no time to delay. Get out and go the Castlereagh way. Blessings abound like grapes on a vine. Traveling on the Castlereagh line. Coolum, Kilroy, Carrickanungra, Cooyakin, Kinkooparoo, Dagan, Dalveen, Darra, Delungra, Daysdale, Denman, Dunedoo. When traveled all roads are named to enshrine in history as the Castlereagh line.
Yeah, Bill, we'll let you go, but thank you so much for giving us a call and some of those memories of the radio serials that were produced in the commercial sphere. We do have a few others. Steve, should we listen to another Castlereagh line clip and then talk about some more?
You ever make a fool of me like that again, I'll kill you, I swear to God.
Nobody makes a fool of anyone else, Jack. We only make fools of ourselves. I can't think why you're so upset. In any case, you got the deal you wanted. It makes no difference now.
I told you not to say anything. I want you to keep your trap shut. It'll be all over the place tomorrow. You'll be known as the town harlot.
Whatever else he may be, I somehow don't see Matt Gore as a gossip monger.
Where did those opals come from? Where did you get them?
I stole them from a dead man, like you stole that gold. But I've only got one death on my conscience. You have five I know of, and God knows how many I don't.
Who was he?
A lot of drama, Steve.
Yeah, a lot. And that's what I was saying. That's a really strong example of things that we probably wouldn't write and certainly wouldn't put to air these days. You know, I'll kill you and you town harlot. How awful. But it reflects a time and a time of great tension that thankfully we hope is now long past us.
Yeah. Now, someone just texted to say, you haven't mentioned Dad and Dave. Well, let's mention Dad and Dave.
Let's mention Dad and Dave based on the Steel Rudd classic on our selection. Dad and Dave, it was actually the interesting thing about Dad and Dave is that was the first radio serial to be syndicated on those transcription discs. So until then, as we talked about, they were live performances, but Dad and Dave made history because it could be recorded. And the beautiful thing about that was that every station, like Bill was talking about, he was at 2RG in Griffith and then he moved to 2KO in Newcastle. Well, if you had it all at the same time, then you were fixed to a certain time of day, but that broke that nexus and some serials were played in breakfast, some were played in drive and other times of day.
We now present the first episode of Dad and Dave. A human story of two typical Australians, their families, their lives, their hopes, their doubts, their fears and their triumphs. The characters of Dad and Dave represent all that is sturdy, honest and resourceful in the great Australian outback. You'll laugh with them, you will sympathize with them, and perhaps their troubles may in some way remind you of your own.
and perhaps their courage will inspire you. Now let us visit the homestead in Snake Gully, just off the road to Gundagai.
That's another one that's very well remembered. It's always coming up in the nightlife quiz.
Absolutely. Always. 1937 was the first episode of Dad and Dave, and the characters really personified, you know, we'd call it a bit of jingoism now, but it was capturing country life at the time.
Now we have Chris who's saying, oh, the Blue Hills theme makes some people cry because it evokes the memories of glowing golden summers and other holiday time spent on their grandparents' farms. They listened every lunchtime, so it represents happy childhoods of long ago spent with loved people who are long gone.
Beautiful.
For some people it's too poignant, says Chris. Now Bruce, who says, I'm 75, he says, Chicken Man. Now, there's a radio serial I remember. I wish I could find it again. We do have a little bit
of Chicken Man for you, Bruce. Chicken Man. And, you know, this was just a total send-up of all the serious, you know, Supermans and all those people. It was the US in the 1960s turning the tables and just sending up all those things.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
It's a bit of James Bond vibe going on there with the music. Here's a little more.
Monday through Friday, Commissioner, I am regularly employed as a shoe salesman for a large downtown department store.
Yes.
However, my weekends will be free, and therefore I will be available to you as the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
And you will be known as?
I will be known as Chicken Man. Miss Helfinger, please bring your notepad and pencil and come into my office immediately.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming so quickly. Miss Helfinger, this is Mr. Benton Harbor. Hello, Miss Harbor.
No, I'm Miss Helfinger. You're Mr. Harbor.
Oh, yes. How do you do? Please take a note, Miss Helfinger, that Mr. Harbor will be available on weekends to fight crime as...
Yes.
Chicken Man.
Chicken Man?
Chicken Man.
It's ridiculous. And you can see, you know, it was referencing the bat signal to call Batman. The commissioner would call Batman. So... A lot of those things had become a bit twee, you know, in the 1960s. They were old-fashioned. And the Americans who invented Chicken Man just, they wanted to reference it, but they wanted to turn it on its heads. And it became quite a popular, fun, very short segment, often in breakfast shows.
Mm. Now, Nicole in the Southern Highlands says, the radio serials I remember, I think from the 50s, that were on from about 5:30 after our dinner. So we went to bed to listen to our own radio. My sister and I would listen to mainly American series like Superman, Jungle Jim. We loved Captain Silver and the Sea Hound, among others. Now, you want to talk about Superman, Steve?
Yeah, I do. And Superman's a great example of that thing of the American versions coming to us, but then not being available and having to employ Australian actors. And we, from the 1940s in Australia, made our own version of Superman. Leonard Teal was Superman. And, of course, it was the usual Superman that we know from all the versions that we've heard over the years. But when we listen to this one, listen to just a few of the things, because remember, this was quite early, no television, of course. So you had to, this is a great example of referencing action on radio without pictures. So Superman dives into this bus to save people, and he has to pull them up through the roof. And the child says, I'm going up, up, up. And so there were all these vocal symbols and sound symbols to reflect the action, and also moments of silence, which we would not put in a radio drama or a commercial or something these days because it's not done. But they used silence, they used the voice, they used sound effects and the words to create those pictures in your mind.
Look, Dad! The doors have closed. We're moving.
Right. The brakes. Something's happened to the brakes.
Oh, let's get out. Quick, open the doors.
No. Oh, they're jammed. They're tight shut.
Dad, we're going faster and faster. We're going downhill. And look, there's a tree falling right across the roadway.
Why, look! Look there in the sky.
What is it?
It's a man.
Why, he's flying.
It can't be. It's not possible.
Dad, he's coming straight at us. He's swooping down, coming through the roof.
There's a lot on the SMS, Steve, of appreciation for Chicken Man.
Yes, people love Chicken Man. It was just so ridiculous.
I do remember. So good, said Jen. Bruce, who was our original texter, thank you. I loved that. I loved Chicken Man, says Shane. Okay, so Chicken Man, a very popular fellow.
Going back to Superman, at the beginning of it, you know, we all know that faster than a speeding bullet, etc. In the original one, you know, it's faster than an aeroplane because that was that was the technology of the day. And he could leap an eighth of a mile in a single bound, and he could jump a 20-story building. Now, you know, we've got huge buildings now. You can imagine Superman, you know, flying over these big buildings. But in the 1940s, to be able to leap a 20-story building was something special.
That was some feat. Now, two Collins, not one but two, have both mentioned Yes What, which we'll talk about in a sec.
I love Yes What. Yes.
Colin in Westbury just says, the community radio station Golden Days Radio that's based in Melbourne and still play a lot of old radio serials, including Dad and Dave.
Good on you, Golden Days Radio.
Okay, so what was Yes What all about, Steve?
Yes What began in 1936, ran till 1941, but then it was repeated until the 1990s because it just encapsulated those naughty school kids. I remember listening to it while doing my homework in high school on 2UE, but it was on so many stations over its 60 years. It was based on a British series called The Fourth Form at St. Michael's, and in Australia it was The Fourth Form at St. Percy's, and then it became Yes What because the naughty children would say, yes, what, sir, and you know, all of that. And that's the name that stuck. But it was the fourth form. Now, that's year 10 now, and you used to leave school at year 10. And if you stayed, then you were groomed for a professional career in university. But if you were in year 10, you know, you knew you were going out to do whatever trade you wanted to do. So you didn't care about what was happening in the classroom. And it captures that so beautifully. It was adapted by a guy in Adelaide called Rex Dorr. He was a broadcaster on 5AD, and he got paid an extra 10 shillings to write and produce this play, and he played the teacher, Dr. Pym, and the other characters were Bottomley Greenbottle, who was the one who was always late, Bottomley was the larrikin, and Stamford was the do-gooder. You know, you'll get in trouble about if you do that, Bottomley. Also here, when we hear the clip, you can hear the nice audio artistry. I think it's Bottomley is looking out the window saying that the teacher's coming, and he's a bit off mic like that. And then the very nice student is very proper and very close to the mic. So just listen to that.
Well, you better come away from that window, Stamford, and come back to your place.
Yeah, I'll say. First, you'll probably do his block properly today.
Well, he certainly doesn't look too pleased about things anyhow.
No, and I shouldn't think so.
Pipe down, Pickles. Here he is.
Yeah, pipe down.
Oh, good morning, boys.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, boys. Now, quickly, I want to give you a word. I want to have a word to you before the inspector arrives.
Inspector, sir?
Yes, the inspector.
But he was here last lesson.
Yes, I know he was here last lesson, but he's coming again today.
Strike, what for, sir?
Why doesn't he live here? It'll save the train fares.
The Bottomley.
Yeah?
If you've got any consideration for my feelings at all, please keep quiet.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Listen to that. Yes, what? Suzanne and I were just talking about, you know, those capturing the naughty kids in the classroom, and I think that does that so well. Mm. And I was also suggesting that, you know, before we finish, we've got to hear at least one How Green Was My Cactus too.
Someone has literally just SMS'd about it's like everyone that is coming next, someone SMS's in to say, I loved How Green Was My Cactus. Just mentioned Chris the Night Watch, though, who says, I have 10 CD discs of about 50 episodes of Yes What. The episodes were recorded on 16 aluminium discs in Adelaide. I used to listen to all the radio plays that you're mentioning. Okay, How Green Is My Cactus?
Yes. Now, How Green Was My Cactus, changed into a more contemporary name called Cactus Chronicles after a while. That began in 1986. Now, what was happening in Australia in 1986? The larrikin Bob Hawke was the Prime Minister, and he was the one. And if you think about all the characters, there were a lot of characters in Parliament in that time, and Bob Hawke became King Bonza, the larrikin running Cactus Island. And we've got three clips. The first one from 1986 is about King Bonza. And I hope we've got time also to hear the insults from the character who was based
All right,
on Paul Keating.
Let's give it a burl.
Next morning, as usual, President Hobbit took off on his power walk.
Meep, meep. Out of the way. Meep, meep, meep,
but in the meep, bushes, danger smirked. An evil spectre with a hatchet.
I'll cut his budget. If I can catch him. On with my Acme brand roller skates. Strap this Acme high power rocket to my back. Light the fuse. And then forget to bend over. Look, the skyrocket. Oh, it must be the 4th of July. Oh, look, the pothole shaped like a Twizzler. Oh, well, out of the way.
And Steve, that's Australia's longest running radio series.
Absolutely. It beat Blue Hills and they're still making it. Bruce Ferrier and the team.
Well, we can go out with what's called the Alphabet of Abuse, which is another one from How Green Was My Cactus.
Yeah, Steve, that's just Paul Keating.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about radio serials. I reckon we could have probably gone another half an hour.
I think so. What great fun.
To them all. There is Steve Ahern. Steve is a radio guru. He's a radio broadcast training consultant. He's written books. He's the founder of the radio news website, radioinfo.com.au.
Order, order. Settle down, boys. We all know this is the last day of the parliamentary term, but we've still got the Mutual Abuse Act to get through.
Excuse me, Madam Spithead, Speaker.
The Honourable the Treasurer. 15 seconds to complete the abusive alphabet from M.
Piece of cake. Every member of the opposition is a mutant, nebulous, opinionated, pustulant, quibbling, reptilian, spineless, two-faced, unctuous, vacuous, wimpish, xenophobic, yabby-brained zit.
Oh, very good, Paul. You're still a champion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and get nodded.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.